Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, and today I'm joined by Sholin Boysen. Sholin, how are you doing?
Hey, Nick, I'm doing good. Excited to be on the show as always.
Good to have you back. And we are also joined by Sarah Gon. Sarah, how are you doing?
I think we've got one more sleep till the year's end of podcasts.
Indeed, we have one more podcast left of this year. This is our second last episode for the year. Our final one will be tomorrow. And then we'll also have a special with the CEO of the Institute of Race Relations, John Endres. But that'll come up probably on either Thursday or Wednesday night. Depends how we get it done. But we'll just wrap up the year and give everyone something to think about over December. Well, hopefully all of our listeners are on holiday. Speaking of people having a good time, though, I think we need to talk about South Africa's two most famous medical parolees, that being Jacob Zuma and Shabir Shaikh, who were filmed dancing the night away at the opening of a new restaurant in Durban. Shabir Shaikh and Zuma apparently were lighting up the dance floor. This is 13 years after Shabir Shaikh was released on medical parole. And Jacob Zuma, who has just had his release on medical parole declared unlawful by the Supreme Court of Appeals. I think that this kind of strengthens the case somewhat when you have Jacob Zuma dancing out on the dance floor when he's supposedly terminally ill. But anyway, the two smiled and posed for photos and seemed to have a great time. And what was striking to me is the journalists who were covering this story, they decided to interview the guy who owned the restaurant. He's a Palestinian guy who is not a South African. He says that he doesn't want to judge anyone, and he likes to see the good in all human beings, you know, regardless of their legal status. But I thought this quote was really interesting. He said, with regards to whether he would ever vote for Jacob Zuma, he said, "You know, strangely enough, we've never had such severe power shedding when Zuma was president, even though they think he was a thief and stealing. He was stealing, maybe, but at least we had electricity." Sara, what's your what's your take on this?
We do know Jacob Zuma likes to dance, so that's at least he was in the right place at the right time. But I'm going to take a fairly sober view of this, and I think the problem, I mean, look, this is not politically, we're no different to a whole lot of other countries where the political class really doesn't worry one iota what the people of the country feel, are doing, are suffering from, or being exposed to, how much money is being stolen, etc. Because you have to be fairly, you probably have a couple of real narcissists to go to have achieved one way or the other medical parole, which is usually only given when you are essentially dying. And whoa, lo and behold, you are on the dance floor. And it's like a real middle finger to the people of South Africa. In other words, we've screwed the legal system. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. We're just going to drink our champagne. And I think there's that element. It's so distasteful. It's actually offensive. But you know, I'm sure it won't be regarded as such by too many other people other than me. I just think it's kind of, if you want to see scuzz balliness in action, this is it.
No, completely. I mean, this is, you know, rules for thee but not for me. What really strikes me, though, about this, and Sholin, tell me if you agree with me here, is this really shows the level to which the ANC will pursue its own solidarity. That at the end of the day, like a kind of mafia organization, the most important thing is that the people inside the club get protected and damn the rest of the world. It doesn't matter what it costs them. Jacob Zuma, as we've talked about on the show before, it's pretty obvious that his political star is at least fading. And that even within the ANC, he's not as powerful as he used to be. And you can see that in the way that KZN has backed Zweli Mkhize rather than his preferred candidates. But Shibuya Sheikh, why is Shibuya Sheikh being protected other than he's part of the club? He's part of the team. He's part of the group. And you have to protect a comrade at all costs. There is no benefit to the ANC to getting these guys out of prison. In fact, if anything, it hurts them because it's just so blatant. And yet here they are, because at the end of the day, it's more important that a comrade is protected than even the party survive the next election.
Sure. No, that's absolutely true, Nick. I must also say that this completely furthers that very narrative that they are that is the set of rules for those who are, you know, like politically connected, those who are actual elites. And then there's a completely different set of rules for ordinary citizens like us. If any of us had to, you know, commit any of those crimes that they might have done, or alleged crimes, whatever the case may be, we'd definitely be in prison, no doubt about it. And I think that this is basically, as you say, Nick, this is what you would call ANC privilege. I think is that your association just with the political party and with those elite, high-ranking individuals, it offers you a whole lot of benefits. And we clearly see this. Even, I mean, like these guys, you know, they were so terminally ill, supposedly, and they had bad health, and they were released from prison. And I think that, I mean, we can now debate about, you know, how truthful was that actually? And I think it even undermines, as Sarah touched on earlier, is that it undermines also the faith that we might place into our legal system. You know, many people say that, you know, this is the last standing capable branch, you know, of the government or of the state, whatever the case may be. But now it's really up to question. And I mean, later on we're going to be discussing a specific judge and issues surrounding him, and it further undermines our trust that we have in our legal system. And yeah, to be honest, Nick, I mean, with Shabir Sheikh, I was too young to have any recollection of everything surrounding his his corruption situation. Yeah. But
Sherman,
I mean,
how old were you 13 years ago?
I was 13 years old. Yeah. 13, 12 years old. So I was still on private.
So Shibuya Sheikh has been on medical parole since you were a teenager.
Yeah, sure. And that's incredible. I mean, he's been terminally ill for the past 13 years. I don't know how he does it, but I'd like to know his secret. Should I join the ANC? What should I do? I'd really like to know from Shibuya Sheikh. So yeah, Nick.
Yeah, clearly in the Zuma camp, they've got access to miracle medication. But, you know, I think there's a, you know, cynicism is always a little bit good in politics because, you know, politics is a game with full of cynics and scuzzbags. But when the cynics get proved right again and again and again and again, it's really bad for the legitimacy and health of your political system. Because that's exactly when people start to check out. That's when people start paying attention. That's when people start to lose hope that anything can ever change. And in a lot of ways, we already have seen that in South Africa, right? When we see, you know, the largest block of voters in the country being those who just don't vote. I can't but draw a connection between the sort of blatant, shameless, you know, hypocrisy and abuse of the rules that we're seeing here, and people thinking, well, the system is rigged, so I might as well not even try. Sorry, any final thoughts?
Not really. I mean, if things had been otherwise, Sheldon could have celebrated his bar mitzvah with Shabir Sheikh's exit from wherever he exited from. It is all I can say.
Yeah, no, that's about right. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And so I'm sure anyone who pays attention to the news has seen the story of a woman who said some vile racist things in Benoni. She's a sort of 60-year-old woman. I think she runs a very small bookkeeping company, not a person of any particular importance. But, you know, the fact that she said some vile racist things on a WhatsApp group had really dominated the political conversation, at least on some news sites for a while. However, and at this around about the same time, we've unfortunately had another incidence of racism, which is perhaps a little bit more worrying to the integrity of the country's institutions, because this is some statements issued forth from the mouth of some might call South Africa's favorite judge, Judge President John Hlophe of the Western Cape High Court, who, while at a Black Lawyers Association meeting, said that white colonizers continue to own the majority of South Africa's land, and that the only way to get it back from the thieves was through nationalization. And to the amusement of the audience, he said that everyone must remind their children at least three times a day that their land was stolen, and point to the thieves, point them out whenever you see them. Sara, in wearing your hat as someone, head of the Free Speech Union of South Africa, what are your thoughts on John Hlophe's comments?
Yeah. Look, as the head of the Free Speech Union, I think he's absolutely entitled to say what he said. And he can say it in public, and he shouldn't be prohibited from saying it or in any way interfered with, unless it contravenes the provisions of the Constitution, which do prohibit in very, very specific cases hate speech, but very narrow. However, you know, when you have a right to do something, you also have a responsibility when you take the consequences of doing something. And there is something absolutely awful about what he said and how he said it and where he said it. And as Sholin pointed out, the difference between him and that horrible woman from Benoni, and I mean no disrespect to Marius Roet, she doesn't matter. I'm sorry to put it that way, but in the public sphere, she doesn't matter. She may be offensive, and people may be angered, but she's not going to affect anybody's lives, and she will be on the receiving end of all sorts of things. Judge John Hlophe, however, tried to suborn two constitutional court judges in 2008 to, let's call it this, interfere with some of the arms deal cases that Jacob Zuma was facing. It doesn't get worse than that. And where are we? A zillion of years later, over a decade, although the Judicial Services Commission has recommended his impeachment, he has still not, President Ramaphosa has not signed off on it. He's also facing potential impeachment inquiry over the deterioration of his relationship between himself and his deputy, Patricia Goliath.
Right. Didn't she accuse him of threatening her to attack her or something like that?
It was a litany of things, and he made all sorts of accusations back in return. But I mean, just to give you, sorry, I'm just having a look. The sort of things that we are looking at is that, you know, he swore at her. He's also sworn at advocates, attorneys, and their clients. Most recently, an advocate was told by Judge Hlophe that his client could F off. And if the matter wasn't resolved by negotiation and it ended up in his court, he will make an award with costs against him. Now, the problem we face here is that there is a very specific code of conduct for judges, which requires moral rectitude, that they don't essentially bring the judiciary into disrepute, and that, you know, otherwise judges are not entirely barred from saying something in the political space. I mean, look at the brouhaha that happened when Mogoeng, as judge president, said basically fairly reconciliatory things about Israel. Things went crazy. But the man...
Right, a judge is not an ordinary person.
No, he's not an ordinary person. And why it's so important is because, given all the utterances he's made and the attitude that he exhibits, which is, let's be frank, anti-white, it's racist, there are going to be matters, I think, there have to be matters where people are going to apply to have him recuse himself, because if it is an issue that concerns race, even if it isn't, he's not going to favor, or he may not, not favor is not the word, but apply himself without fear or favor to the applicants before him. In other words, people are going to go to court anticipating prejudice before they've even opened their mouths. And in every respect, it's not only what he's doing as a judge that affects his ability to perform his function. It discredits the Western Cape division, of which he is still judge president, notwithstanding the process is moving in extraordinarily slowly. But he also imputes dreadful things to the judiciary in particular. And what's important about this is that with its faults, the judiciary has by and large been seen as the third arm of government, as protecting us to some degree from the excesses of the first two arms, which are the parliament and the executive. And this is as crass, this is frankly as crass as it gets. But there's been another negative imputation to the to government, and that is the fact that all of this has taken unbelievably long to get anywhere. I know it's a serious thing to impeach a judge, but it's got to be less serious than destroying the reputation of the third arm of government. So my comment would certainly be that however revolting the lady from Benoni might be, her effect on society, she can be ignored and forgotten. Another racist in pantheon of racism, of racists in South Africa. But John Schlope is that threatens to really undermine the value of our judiciary.
And that'll be the case as long as he is a judge. Yeah. And, you know, he's it's not just race stuff. I mean, he has called an attorney a quote, and I apologize for my language, a piece of white shit. But has also accused another attorney of trying to sleep with his wife, but he didn't say it as diplomatically as that. Sherlyn, which is an interesting claim. Sherlyn, there's a lot of similarities between this story and the last one, right? Firstly, this is a guy who has ridden the Zuma camp coattails, I think, quite spectacularly. But also, you know, you really feel as though the rules are at least being bent or nudged or not taken that seriously when it comes to Judge John Schlope. I don't know. What's your take on this?
Yeah, no. From the outset, Nick, I was rather surprised when I read the that was a press release. That the Free Speech Union released. When I read it, I was shocked. I thought that this was an ANC politician speaking. I had no idea that it was actually a judge, a Western Cape judge. But yeah, Nick, just overall, I think the lack of outrage and the difference between the outrage for when this lady from Benoni said completely racist things, there was massive outrage. Like, everybody started commenting on it. Everybody was like forced to call it out and so forth. But then when the judge continues to make, statements like this, the outrage wasn't really the same. And especially from these people, who tend to be on the left side of the political spectrum or call themselves anti-racist, they suddenly just didn't, call out these statements or these comments by him. Which I think is kind of hypocritical. And many times, they would say no, Sherlyn, but this guy, he can't be racist because of, the color of his skin or whatever the case may be. Or, to be racist, you must have some sort of power. And then my question is, but this is a guy with power. He is a judge. He has influence. He has considerable influence over, our society, especially the region where I live. So clearly this is a guy that has power, and the race and the skin color should not matter. Believe it or not, but black people, whether you are colored, whether you are whatever the race you would like to prescribe yourself as, you also have the ability to be racist. And that's why I think it should be across the board, regardless of your skin color. If you say something rather discriminatory and extremely demeaning like this to another person based on the color of the skin, it's racist. I can guarantee you that. And another thing, Nick, is that his comments on, you know, like this nationalization of the land. You know what? I think I completely agree with Judge Slope to say that, you know what, there was injustices that occurred during apartheid, during colonialism. But the difference between me and Judge Slope is that he believes that it should be the government that owns the land, that should be taking the land away.
Right.
Where I think
He believes that the number of black owners should be reduced to zero, because that's what nationalization of the land would do.
No, exactly. That's what he believes, that it should be the government that takes over the land. Where I would instead advocate that, you know what, we should be giving land from government instead, to vacant land, whatever the case may be, to people in the form of title deeds. Give people ownership over their lands, personal ownership to the individual, to a family. That's where the ownership should lie. So your solution has been tried and it's been tested, and it incredibly failed just across the board by our neighbors in Zimbabwe. It completely failed, and we need to call it out and actually say that these guys are not actually, you know, in the interest of, you know, the black people. You know, we fighting for the cause, and it should be in that, when actually they are actually fighting for the government to be the owners of the land. That's what the nationalization calls for. Whether it's in with the Reserve Bank, whatever, it's for the government to own it. That is what they are calling for. And instead, the better alternative to rectify these very injustices that occurred, it should title deed should be given to people, to ordinary citizens. That's the people who actually deserve the land, Nick.
No, definitely. Sorry, any final thoughts?
Just to pick up on the point that Sheldon makes about ownership, he's talking about nationalization squarely puts him in the political realm. That is not the sort of opinion he should be expressing in his position. Because, I mean, one of our colleagues suggested he may be the judge president of the land court, which is the legislation creating the land court is highly problematic. And can you imagine if he's the judge president of the land court?
He's going to have to recuse himself from every single hearing.
As long as there's a white applicant, I guess so. So that gives you some idea of the seriousness of the thing.
No, indeed. All right, but let us talk now about an interesting political development. And I think this is something that a lot of people saw coming for a while, which is that Songezo Zibi and his group, the Rivonia Circle, who have been describing themselves as a think tank, have confirmed that they will be soon launching a political movement and intend to contest the 2024 national election. So we've got a new political party coming up now. The Rivonia Circle did release, and this was clearly paving the way for their announcement now. They released a few months ago a survey which said that while the ANC is losing support, there's a lot of South Africans who are looking for a new political alternative. I wonder who they had in mind. In this case, I think probably themselves. But anyway, Songezo Zibi, despite saying that it's going to be a political movement which contests the 2024 elections, that the Rivonia Circle would not become a political party, but would launch a campaign under the banner of #SAMustRise that will be on the ballot at the next polls. Zibi said the think tank was calling it a political movement because movement politics are something that is more than just about electing people. If you are a movement, you've got to understand your priorities, which need to be clear, not just as a result of an election, but between elections. He explained that the attendees of a recent summit that the Rivonia Circle hosted agreed that they would together join forces to mobilize 1 million South Africans behind their new political movement. He said, it's easy to say we want a political movement, but 600 people, which is how many attended his conference, don't make a movement. A movement is when numerous South Africans buy into our ideology. A political movement would have its own steering committee, and participants would expand the machinery to convene this new organization. The Rivonia Circle would retain its own separate identity as a think tank, however, presumably aligned with the political party. He said that the movement's goals were to build a new political culture where public representatives were accountable to people and not to political parties, and to build an economy that worked for everyone, not just a few. And they say they will soon have a website set up where people can sign up if they're interested. So a number of things, Sholin, that strike me about this. One, it sounds an awful lot about like exactly what Musi Mawane is promising his new political party is going to do. Two, I don't think this is the last of the political parties we're going to see launch. We're going to have three new interesting contenders for the next election. Musi Mamane's party, Songhe Zozibi's Rivonia Circle, SA Must Rise, whatever their final name is going to be, and Action SA are all going to be contesting for seats in parliament. And I suspect there'll be more coming down the way. So firstly, do you agree with me that there's going to be more coming down the way? And do you think that this party is going to get anywhere? I don't know. What are your thoughts, Sean?
Yeah, Nick, I must be honest. I definitely think that there will be more, political formations, whatever they would like to call themselves, movements or parties. But there will definitely be more people standing up to take it, whether or not this is what we actually need in South Africa is, and I think that's an open question. I mean, the voters must decide whether or not this will actually be an alternative, attractive option. I know that he's, and it's truthful that, there's this large proportion of voters who are just not engaging, possible voters, potential voters, people who are eligible to vote and are not participating. That's absolutely true. But whether he succeeds, I think, and the same goes for with for Musi Mamani's party, for any other political movement forming, my question will still come down to what are you guys' your ideological position? Because one thing I note about these individuals as well is that they're not really clear on their policy proposals. They're not really clear on what the solutions actually are. But, they have the sense that there needs to be a movement. The direction that this movement is going into is still not clear. And I think that will be a hindrance for any progress that they actually seek to make, especially if they are trying to attract this large proportion of people who are not voting for the ANC that they claim no other political party is able to gain or take from. It really needs to come to the point where they are actually stating, you guys know this is what we stand for, this is what we seek to achieve when we are in government and when we are in parliament, these are the policies that we are against and these are the policies we are for. Those are things that I need as a voter to actually support in a political party or political movement. That's at the foundation. And I don't think that they have that to offer thus far. And one risk that I think they make is thinking that, we can be this humongous tent where everybody's welcome. You come from that side of the political spectrum. You come from that side. Let's have a meal around this table. I do not think that will necessarily work. It's causing divisions in the ANC. Previously, under the in the DA itself, it also was a source of tension. People not necessarily agreeing under this large political tent and standing firm on policy, standing firm on what the ideological foundation is. That will actually be crucial and determine the success. And right now, I do not think they have that secret weapon. That's not a secret, I must be honest.
So, I tend to agree. You don't want to run into the problem that COPE had, which is back in 2010 or something. I went on their website and I clicked on the policies section and it said coming soon. And it was never finished as far as I know. And I think this is a problem we do have. Ideology, no actual voter cares about ideology necessarily. And there's like 10 of them who care about ideology. But while if you say, do you care about political party ideology, voters will say, oh, we don't care. When it actually comes down to the ballot booth, they do care about it, but it's not expressed in that way. It's always expressed in, well, this party doesn't stand for anything, or this party doesn't actually have any real ideas. And I do fear that a lot of the problem with some of the opposition, so the DA less so, although I do think sometimes it has this problem as well. There's this kind of vibes-based policy. It's like, oh, we vote for our political party based on the vibes it gives off. And, the DA has written quite a few policy proposals. It actually is actually in government somewhere. The IFP is actually in government somewhere. So you can see a good example of what the parties want. But for parties that aren't properly in government, you really do need to kind of clearly state with at least some specificity what your policy positions are going to be, because otherwise you just become this sort of happy-clappy NGO lovey-dovey mush, which is not actually going to do anything different. And voters will smell that out. Maybe they'll vote for you one election, but the next time they're going to be like, I don't know, guys. We want something a little bit more substantial. I don't know. Sarah, what are your thoughts on the prospects of this new party?
I don't know. Frankly, they've got a lot of work to do. But I think it's really just the march of the egotists because, you know, we all think politicians are revolting and politics is horrible. And there's only one problem is if you really want to be at the cutting edge of getting anything done in this country, you've got to form a political party, not a movement, which suggests all sorts of other things, and create some policies and go on the stumps for them and try and attract people. Because, you know, this is not we can't vote for movements. We can only vote for parties. So just get in the dirt and do it.
No, exactly. All right. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And we will see you tomorrow. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll see you tomorrow on the Daily Print Show. Cheers, everyone. Have a good one.